This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Stories. This week's favorite story was chosen by the distinguished American concert artist, Miss Gladys Swartout, star of the Metropolitan Opera. She asked us to present a tale by the great novelist H.G. Wells. In one of the best of his stories, I shall play Juan Francisco Núñez. Here's Act One of Strange Valley. Miles and more from Chimborazo and the wildest wastes of South America's Andes, there lies a mountain valley cut off from the world of men. You have heard of it, perhaps, as I had. A legend of an Indian who had come out of these mountains in the days of the conquistadores. He told of a race of men living in an upland valley of the Andes whose way of life was so astonishing that few people believed that such a nation actually existed. But before that strange valley could be explored, there came a great earthquake. One whole side of the mountain crest crashed down in thunder and cut off the valley forever from the exploring feet of men. I had heard this legend handed down from father to son out of the distant past. And to me, it was a tale to be told by firelight, never in the honest brightness of the day. I was certain, as you are no doubt certain, that there is no such valley in the remoteness of the Andes. But you are wrong, and I was wrong, for I have but lately returned from there.
That I should find a man here by the name of Núñez. The man here.
I am Núñez.
Good. My name is Chatterton. I've come out here to your country to climb mountains. Wish to engage you as a member of my party. We're leaving at dawn to climb Parascata Petal. You know the mountain?
Oh, yes. It is the Matterhorn of the Andes, but no man has ever reached the summit.
I shall. I am prepared to pay you 10 English pounds for your services as a guide to my party.
That is the price you pay a man to cling to the cheekbone of death?
There are others who will accept my offer if you refuse. Well, Senor Núñez?
Where is the meeting place?
The cathedral steps.
I shall be there at dawn. The mountain Parascata Petal rises into air so thin a man's ears ring as with the sound of church bells, and the glaciers far beneath him dance before his unsteady eyes. On a narrow shelf of rock overlooking the unknown side of the mountain, we built our night shelter. There we slept, dreaming fitfully of the morrow when we should stand at the summit.
Wake up. This is the day. On your feet, men. Wake up.
Where is Núñez?
He was sleeping here at the edge of the cliff.
Blanket is gone.
Look, below.
He fell. There's the trace of his fall in the snow.
He must have rolled off the ledge in his sleep.
Núñez! Núñez!
Núñez!
Núñez!
Núñez! The floor is open. Search for him.
No.
But he may be lying down there in pain.
We are going on to the summit. The man is obviously dead.
I was not dead. True, I had rolled from the ledge in my sleep and had fallen 1,000 feet into a slope of soft snow, rolling over and over, stunned and insensible, until I came to rest at last at the foot of a narrow upland valley. I was bruised. My clothes were torn. My hat and ice axe had gone. But no bones were broken, for the soft snow had cushioned my fall. By the growing light of day, I set out on my aching legs to explore this mountain wilderness into which I had fallen. I found a path, a man-made path. I followed it across a rolling meadow and presently beheld a village. A strange cluster of stone huts arranged in neat rows with wide paved streets between. But the plasterwork which covered the walls of these buildings was splotched with every imaginable shade of gray or chalk or mud-like brown. This wild plastering seemed so strange that I said to myself, "It's a good man who did that must have been utterly blind." The ancient legend crossed my mind. The old wives' tale of the mountain valley cut off from the world of men. Could it be that I stood at the threshold of this lost nation? Had the accident on the mountain peak plunged me into a civilization unvisited since the days of Cortes and Pizarro? Hello, you carrying the water bucket.
Who called?
I am a stranger to your valley, a visitor from a far land who comes asking your help and friendship.
Speaks with a strange accent, Brother Correa.
But he seems to be a man, Brother Pedro. Where does he come from?
Down out of the rocks.
Over the mountains I come, from near the city called Bogota, where there are hundreds of thousands of people, and where the city passes out of sight.
Sight? Sight?
What is sight?
Let us touch him, Correa. Find out what manner of creature he is.
Touch him.
Feel the coarseness of his hair, like goat's hair.
Rough as the rocks which begot him. But perhaps he will grow finer here.
What is this?
Those are my eyes.
There's a queer growth on his face.
Two of them. Little brushes which flutter back and forth.
What possible use can they be?
Careful. Mind my eyes.
Oh, the poor man stumbled against our water bucket, Pedro.
His senses are still imperfect. He stumbles and talks unmeaning words. Lead him by the hand.
No need, my friend. I can see.
See?
Help him, Brother Correa. He's sick and afraid, like a child who is lost.
Let us lead him to the elders.
Yes. But shout first, lest the children be afraid.
It was a country of the blind. Long generations ago, this gentle race of mountain folk had lost the power of sight in a dread epidemic, perhaps. Now their eyes were sunken hollows in their faces, and all memory of vision, of light and dark and color, and the miracle of seeing, all this was forgotten. I recall the old proverb, "In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king." Surely I could become king here. I, who had two eyes to see with, and they, who lived in utter darkness. I could become their master.
Take care. He has stumbled again.
I was not watching. I was thinking of an old proverb.
Hold his arm tightly, Correa. Help him through the city.
Who is this creature you are bringing to us, Pedro?
It is a wild man who has come down out of the rocks.
I have come over mountains and glaciers, halfway to the sun, out of the city called Bogota.
A wild man using wild words. Did you hear that? Bogota. His name is Bogota.
Aye, Bogota, a city to your village. I come from the great world where men have eyes and see.
His name is Bogota.
He stumbled twice as we came down the path.
Take him to the elders. The elders will know what to do with him.
They let me into the largest building of their village. The door was closed behind me. I stood in darkness, utter darkness. No window, no light, no fire. I groped through the black. I tripped against something soft. I fell. A dozen hands reached toward me, held me. I struggled against them. It was useless. I cannot see in this pitchy blackness.
Do not be afraid, Bogota. We are the elders. We will try to help you. Now, what are you trying to tell us by this word, see?
Why, to
sea is to be held breathless by the sun rising over the snowfields. The purple twilight against the peak of Parascotabethel. The soft whiteness of a woman's face. That is what it is to see.
Purple? Whiteness? Oh, you are but newly formed, Bogota. We will instruct you in the ways of the world so that you may live in peace among us.
Oh, I know more of the world than you have dreamed of.
If you are arrogant, Bogota, we shall have no choice but to cast you out, and you will starve in the rocks and the wilderness. You must forget this talk of sea.
Has no one ever told you, in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king?
What is blind?
It was infuriating. It treated as if I were a child. To have my precious power of vision laughed at by these blind men, how could I bring them to reason? Prove to them the superiority of my eyes. One there was who didn't laugh. A young girl with a serious, clear-cut face. Her eyes were not sunken after the common way of the valley, but lay in a shadow as if they might open again at any moment. In my first days there, it was she who brought me food. Goat's milk in a wooden bowl and rough, salted bread. I thought her lovely from the first. But presently, she seemed to me the most beautiful thing in all creation. My heart trembled as I thought to speak with her. Child, what is your name?
I am Medina Sarate, the youngest daughter of Correa. It was Correa, my father, who found you in the rock.
Oh, no, no, Medina. It was I who found him. With my eyes, I saw your father and the man called Pedro carrying water buckets. You understand, don't you? You believe that I can see?
I believe that it is a beautiful fancy, what you call seeing, like poetry or soft music. And I believe that you are not a wild man, as my father said. But you are gentle and kind.
Oh, Medina. Medina Sarote. This is a frightening place into which I have fallen. A valley of strangeness beyond belief. And of loneliness from which there is no escaping. But, Medina, if you will be my friend, perhaps I can find happiness in your country of the blind. Ready for Act Two of this week's favorite story from the pen of H.G. Wells. We're grateful to Miss Gladys Swarthout for selecting it. And now, if Maestro Claude Sweeten will raise the curtain of the second act, I shall retire as your host to reappear in a moment as Juan Francisco Nunez, who is a visitor in the country of the blind. In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So goes the ancient proverb, but I was offering poor proof of it, for I found it somehow impossible to demonstrate to these people the advantages of seeing. They had dwelt so long in darkness that they had forgotten light. So the wisest of their elders set out to teach me what they considered truth.
The world, Bogota, is hollow. Our valley is the bottom of it. It is circled by the rocks, which are the end of the world, out of which rises the roof of our cavern. About 10 times 10, the height of a man, this roof hangs above the world, made of rock and very, very smooth. It is from here that the dew and the rain fall and the avalanches come.
Oh, no, no. You have it all wrong, my friend. What of the sun and the stars? And the clouds and the mountains and the oceans.
You speak words without meaning, Bogota, as the child who babbles made up words before he can speak.
I speak truth. Why, that the world runs 10,000 miles beyond these rocks. There are a million little valleys, such as yours. And the sky is light years high, so that no man has ever succeeded in measuring it.
What I tell you is the wisdom of our fathers, Bogota. Now, the hours are divided into two parts. The warm and the cool.
The day and the night.
It is good to work in the cool. So the warm is our time for sleeping. It is my custom to sleep in the cool, as you call it, and to work in the day when there is light to see by.
You are more stupid and more stubborn than the smallest child I've ever tried to teach. Leave me, Bogota. Go away. You disgust me.
Do not trample the grass, Bogota.
What?
It is not allowed.
Medina, how did you know I was on the grass?
I heard you.
I made no sound.
Poor Bogota. You cannot hear very well. Come and walk with me. Can you hear the path?
I can see the path.
Bogota, why do you still speak of seeing?
Oh, because my eyes tell me things. Things which are happening at a great distance.
Beyond the length of my arm? Beyond my fingertips?
Far beyond. Medina, I can see from one edge of your world to the other.
Oh, that would be a great advantage. Let me test you.
Of course. Ask me. I'll tell you what I see.
What is my father doing now?
Well, where is he?
That is for you to tell me, with your seeing.
You must tell me in what general direction to look.
Very well. I left my father inside our house by path 17. Now tell me, what is he doing?
Well, I cannot see through the walls of a house. I can only see what is happening outside in the light of day.
Then tell me what Pedro is doing. This is his hour to be working in the rice field.
Well, how can I see the rice field? It is on the other side of the hill.
Why will you not forget about seeing, Bogota? It seems to me a useless thing, a bad thing.
Oh, Medina, how can I explain to you what it is to see a flower?
But I know the fragrance of a flower, Bogota. And I have felt their velvet petals with my fingertips.
But the beauty of color, of light and shadow, is lost to you.
The beauty of our music is often lost to you, Bogota. Your ears do not hear the lovely sounds which give us such pleasure. You are too busy seeing.
Was ever a man confronted with such perplexities? Everyone ridiculed me. Even Medina, the gentlest and most beautiful of God's creatures, couldn't understand.
Behold, it is the seer. Tell us, Bogota, what color is the air?
The air? Why, it has no color.
Then how can you see it? Why do you not tell the truth, Bogota? Admit that all this seeing is crazy talk.
It is not so. I'll show you what it is to see.
Stay away. You have a spade in your hands. I can hear it.
Yes, and you will feel for it, too. You will feel this spade, for I can see where to strike. When I saw the man lying unconscious at my feet, I knew that I had done an evil thing. There was a hush, an ominous quiet all through the village. There seemed to be a quiver of excitement in the air, an alarm sounding outside the range of my hearing. Presently, as if by a prearranged signal, all the able-bodied men formed into a continuous line, moving slowly forward, each man whirling a stick or a club, or beating the grass in front of him with a sharp-edged spade. They kept turning their heads from side to side, muttering to each other, keeping their ranks tightly closed. I had no choice but to retreat before this advancing human wall. I was forced out of their village, up into the rocks where I stayed two nights and a day, an outcast, without shelter, without food. All that time, the pulse beat in my ears drummed out the exploded proverb, "In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king." In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Hello, let me come back. I am hungry.
Bogota?
Yes. I'm sorry I struck the man. Let me come back.
Tell us, are you still able to see?
Oh, no, that was folly. The word means nothing, less than nothing.
What is above your head, Bogota?
Oh, just as you said, about 10 times 10, the height of a man. There's a roof above the world of rock and very, very smooth. Before you ask me any more, give me some food or I shall die.
difficult to believe the kindness and tolerance of these blind people. I was the rebel in their midst, but they were able to forgive me. My civilization was 1,000 years in advance of theirs, but they had mastered the skill of living together in peace and goodwill, which we in the outer world have yet to learn. So it was they took me back into their world. And Medina nursed me kindly, for I was weak from exposure. I watched her by the firelight. No one could have guessed from the sureness and precision of her movements that she was sightless. The emotion I felt toward Medina was more than gratitude, and I knew there could be no happiness for me in the country of the blind unless I could share my life with her.
I will never consent to such a marriage. The man has delusions.
But he's better than he was, Father. He loves me, and Father, I love him.
But to me, it is wrong.
It is wrong for us to be apart.
But he is different from us. He suffers from a sickness called seeing.
Father, what if he were to be cured? Perhaps our doctors could do something to make him like we are.
Well, there would be no objection then.
Oh, I will talk with him. He loves me. I know he will agree. I will talk to him.
I don't understand.
Oh, how can you be so difficult, my beloved? Father refuses to let me marry you because he says your mind is sick, and it is your eyes which cause it. But if you were to be cured...
My eyes? Cured?
Then we could be married. And oh, I shall make you a good wife.
You cannot mean that you want me to give up my sight.
Bogota?
My world is sight. I cannot lose all the beautiful things. Light and shadow, the far sky with its drifting clouds, the sunset and the stars. And there is you, Medina. It is good to have sight to see your sweet, serene face. Your lips, your hands folded together. It is these eyes of mine that first made me love you. And now I must lose them, touch you, hear you, yes, but never see you again.
I wish sometimes...
Yes?
I wish sometimes you would not say such things.
Would it please you if I were to consent to this?
Oh, if you would. If you only would.
My friend, I beg you to listen with charity and understanding to what I must tell you now. Believe me, I loved Medina. I love her now. I think I shall always love her. But of a sudden, I saw the sunlight strike the peak of Parascotta Petal. I watched the morning like an angel in golden armor marching down the steep. My vision raced down to the further slope. Distance beyond distance to the city of Bogota. A place of multitudinous, stirring beauty. A glory by day, a luminous mystery by night. My thoughts sped on to the vaster world beyond. Down the rivers where the big steamers come flashing by on their incessant journeying to the sea. The sea. Where a man can behold the sky. Not 10 times 10 the height of a man. But an arch of immeasurable blue in which the circling stars are floating. I find my way back into the world of men. If one went up so, up that gully and across the gorge, one might come out among those stunted pines. It might be managed. I might yet find my way back. Without realizing it, I had already climbed up into the rocks toward my gateway of escape. I looked down and back, and saw a tiny figure standing at the edge of the village. How could I leave behind me the one I loved more than my own life? I cannot stay with you, Medina. I would hate to blame you for the darkness, and our love would fade like a broken flower. There is no such man. I am Juan Francisco Nunez, and I am going back to the world of men. By sunset, I had reached the foot of the glacier. In the half-light came a great longing. But her sky was stone. Mine was air and sunlight. The glow of sunset passed. The night came, and I slept under the cold stars, dreaming of my lost Medina. Love of reading and hearing good stories, we can only say it makes young men old and wise for their age, and it makes old men young for their age. Next week's half hour is such a story. Anton Chekhov's A Work of Art. Miss Dorothy Kirsten, lovely Metropolitan Opera star, selected it. An amusing, ironic tale of the unexpected. We hope you'll be listening.